Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, Bulls writer at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 podcast. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up and say what's up to us at 331-979-1369. That's our text and voicemail line. Anywhere you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show, make sure you're sending your questions, your comments, anything you want to talk about with the Chicago Bulls to 331-979-1369. So welcome back. This is the first week, I guess, of the offseason, we can really call it, for the Chicago Bulls. Plenty of playoff action this weekend, and we're going to get into some of those games. And I would say that, honestly, adding the playoffs this weekend plus the play-in game for the Timberwolves and the Nuggets, this has been shaped up to be a one heck of a first start to the weekend for the NBA playoffs. So beyond that, I want to touch on some more of the John Paxson postseason press conference, kind of what his thoughts were. We just kind of dive into all the topics that he brought up, because I thought there was some interesting points that might shift your view on how the Bulls or what the Bulls might do this summer. But Matt, first, what's going on? How are you? And what did you think? Overall, just give me your 30-second shot at what you thought about the Paxson interview overall.
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, I guess my biggest takeaway would be that I wasn't really surprised by anything. We kind of had an idea of what we would hear from Paxson based on the kind of questions we were anticipating. How do you feel about this rebuild after 1 year? Do you still feel optimistic about these young core pieces and Dunn, Levine, and Markkanen, the guys they got in the trade? And really, I mean, no big surprises. I don't feel particularly great and more optimistic after hearing from John Paxson, but I don't necessarily feel disheartened by any of it. I don't feel betrayed or lied to about any of it, because as much as he did try to put a positive spin on things, he was also very frank in his analysis of guys like Zach LaVine, saying he needs to be a better basketball player, like Chris Dunn, saying he needs to get better this offseason, finishing around the rim, etc. And he said that we have a long way to go. With that, he also did say that this is not something that they want to endure again next season, as far as the, you know, he didn't use the tanking word carefully, but that's what, you know, we all know that's what he was talking about. And it sounds like that they plan on trying to be competitive and winning games and getting back close to playoff contention next season. Now, obviously, that depends a lot on what kind of progression we see from those key young guys in the offseason and coming into next season, and whether or not all three of them can stay healthy, knock on wood. And I mean, it's fair to assume that that's how Paxson would look at this, optimistically but cautiously optimistic, saying, yeah, we got a long way to go, but we do feel better now than where we were a year ago before making the Butler trade. And I think at least that much is fair.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I thought going through the press conference, just the way he was speaking about the team and sort of the direction. And I think that was the biggest highlight for me, just like kind of rang a bell in my head, was when he said, if you look back a year from now, we're in a better position. And that's more obvious. But I think if you take that and divide it up with not only the talent that's here and sort of their direction that we've been calling for forever, the growth in Fred Hoiberg, the growth in Chris Dunn, Lowry Markkanen, and Zach LaVine. Obviously, there's some major implications this summer for those three players, but you see some growth and some guys come out of the woodworks that the Bulls really invested their time in. Two picks in Denzel Valentine and Bobby Portis. Those are the Bulls' own picks. They really grew into players that maybe will possibly be a part of a rotation in this Bulls' future. I think the biggest thing for me, though, John Paxson seems to be a lot different, I think. And that's sort of changed all throughout this year in the way he's sort of combated himself with the media and also been straight up with this team. I think he realized after last year and the whole Butler trade going down in the playoffs and everything that just happened last season, maybe it's fair to say that he's looking at the fan base and how angry they were about this team and really trying to not only just say that they're reshaping this culture as far as the players and on-court and what's going there, but overall in the way that this team looks, not only from a fan base standpoint, but from a national perspective. Because if you think about it, it's kind of a laughing joke. We put up a billboard of fire Gar Paxson not even a year ago, and the shift from the way it sounded and the way he would answer questions, the way he would talk about this team is so different, I feel like, just in a year's time from this press conference. And it's to say the least, it's helping me buy in a little bit more. Now, I don't buy in a completely 100%, but it's helping me buy in a little bit more and hoping that there is actual change going on, not just on the court, but organizationally.
Yeah, and I think it at the same time, it's fair to be skeptical. There's fair skepticism about what they'll be able to do adding two players in this upcoming draft, you know, one with their own pick and one with the Pelicans. Hopefully, especially their own, maybe they'll get a little bit lucky and they'll have at least a few good options of a player who can come in and help this team right away. But the flip side of that is that you still have to be really, as I said, skeptical that this group is going to make some big leap back to realistic contention next season. If anything, they might get back to where they were before the Butler trade, which is a team that's borderline 500 basketball. Maybe they luck into the seventh or eighth playoff spot based on the other number of tanking teams that are still in the Eastern Conference. And really, it kind of makes you ask the question, well, do we really believe that we're better off than we were this time a year ago? And maybe because of the limitations of that group that was assembled last season, you know, on its last legs with adding veteran guys around Jimmy Butler in a system that didn't work with the head coach that they picked, you could say, okay, yeah, if guys like Markkanen and Dunn and LaVine all reach some sort of borderline all-star potential that we all hope is there, maybe they get back to being a middle-of-the-pack team, but then you're kind of just back where you were. So, like, to me, it's you can't really fault Paxson because he didn't really lie or he wasn't hiding any truths and he wasn't hiding behind any missteps that they made because they didn't really make too many missteps over the past calendar year dating back to the end of last season. But there's still just a kind of an empty feeling of, okay, well, I guess we just have to wait through this offseason. Not going to be probably a lot going on in free agency. You hope that whoever they pick in this draft comes in and proves themselves to be NBA caliber players and they get closer back to where they were. And that's just kind of an empty feeling, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I can understand that. And I think there's a lot of Bulls fans out there, too, that have a lot of skepticism. And there's both sides. There's a lot of Bulls fans that are pretty optimistic about the core that the Bulls have, the pick that's coming up, which is the sixth pick, if there isn't any weird movements in the lottery. There's a lot of optimism, but at the same time, it's like, okay, do you trust these guys fully after we've just only seen 1 year of this rebuild? And I guess the real question for the whole entire fan base is like, what was your timeline for this rebuild? Did you want this team to be back in playoff contention somewhere in the top of the East in what, 4 years from now? 4 years from where you started that trade? Was it 3 years? Was it 5 years? I think that's where you kind of have to scope yourself and figure out where Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lowry Markkanen, where they're going to start to play at their maximum potential. Is that at age, what, 23, 24, 25. Is that 3, 4, 5 years into the league? Plus, it's about who you add in this draft. I think that's the most important key to the entire success. And I can understand it from saying, like, okay, that you traded Butler, we went tanking one season, and now maybe this season coming up is sort of going to be borderline 500 basketball. I'm okay with that, but in that third year, you need to take another step. This team needs to be a 43 to 47 win basketball team, and you need to see another step from Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. I'm okay with taking one step back and having to be 500 again and maybe battling for that eight spot if it means that you're moving towards something greater, something that's going to put you in that top of the conference, somewhere in the 1-4 seed in the Eastern Conference for a long time. And I think that comes with the growth from Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn. I wanted to get your thoughts real quick on Zach LaVine, though. I thought that it was interesting that John Paxson had named Zach LaVine first and foremost out of this entire press conference and saying that he needs to be a better basketball player for this Bulls team. Obviously, he named a couple other players after that, but strongly, you know, putting it out there that Zach LaVine's got to be better as a basketball player, and going into a contract year, maybe this is the start to a long negotiation this summer.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the Bulls do in those negotiations with LaVine. But I mean, I think Paxson gave us a little bit of a, you know, insight and a little bit of a hint as far as how he sees those negotiations playing out, saying that it's largely going to be dictated by the market this summer, which he mentioned is still pretty tight after that big spike and the fact that the cap has now sort of normalized itself, leveled off a bit, and a lot of teams are in cap crunches. There aren't a lot of teams out there this summer who could offer max money to Zach LaVine, nor would they. Because he's a guy still coming off of an ACL who only played 24 games this season. And in those 24 games, yes, he showed flashes of his great elite athleticism and his offensive ability, but certainly not on a consistent basis. So the Bulls and Paxson know that they actually have the leverage in those negotiations with LaVine this summer. And if everybody, LaVine, his agent, his camp, and the Bulls in the front office all want him to stick around and don't want to let him walk after making him a big piece of that Butler trade, they can say, you know, if you go out and if you want to test the waters and see what kind of offers are out there, Zach, go ahead, bring us offers and we'll probably be ready to match him. But I mean, that's essentially calling a bluff if LaVine does actually want to test free agency, because I don't see him getting those kind of offers. The Bulls are probably going to end up paying him a little bit more than they would want and probably a little bit more than he's worth. But I don't think it's going to be anywhere near max level money, because let's be honest, he didn't earn that.
I'm with you. And I think the Bulls, is it smart for the Bulls to let Zach LaVine in a window in a free agency period this summer that not many teams have a whole lot of money to spend, talking big time money, Bulls and maybe four or five other teams in the NBA. Is it smart for the Bulls to say, all right, Zach LaVine, you go out and test the market, see what you get from other teams, and that sort of is going to set where Zach LaVine might get paid? Or do you feel like that could maybe backfire on the Bulls? But I feel like it's kind of a good move. It's you're letting him go out, see what these five or the six other teams that have max money to spend, see if they're genuinely interested in bringing him in. If they're not, then it's kind of going to set the market at what other teams value Zach LaVine at. And you're also not getting the bias of, okay, he's part of the Butler deal, so we're going to overspend. I think they're taking their biases as the player and what they have attached to him so far to go and really see what the market actually is. If you were a team from an outside standpoint saying, all right, this is what we value in Zach LaVine. So I think it's a good idea. What do you think about them sort of telling him, you know, go see what other teams want you to want to spend on you, and that's going to kind of set the market?
See, I mean, I don't know. To me, that's an interesting strategy, but I think the Bulls front office would be better served before telling Zach, hey, if you want to go and look at the test the market and see if what other offers are out there for your services, go ahead and do that, then come back to us and we'll talk. I think if both sides genuinely want him to stay in Chicago, what they should do, they being the Bulls front office, is offer him a multi-year deal that's a low-ball offer, but not a disrespectfully low-ball offer. Offer him something that is you know, something that he wouldn't scoff at and then hold a grudge at the front office about because it's so disrespectfully low, but something saying, we feel like this is fair based on where you are as your talent level and a guy still coming off an injury and there's some risk there, but we still want you to, we still want to keep you here for this rebuild. We believe in your future. So here's a multi-year deal offer. If you feel like this isn't fair and think you deserve more than this and can earn more than this elsewhere and are interested in testing those free agent waters, feel free. That is your right. Talk to your agent, talk to your team, and you know, we can reconvene at this negotiating table in a month or, you know, whatever that timeline becomes. But I think it's in the Bulls' best interest to give him right off the bat a multi-year offer that is what they deem to be a little bit less than they think he wants, but isn't so low that it's disrespectful and then creates some kind of grudge or uncomfortable relationship with him in the front office moving forward. To me, that makes more sense than telling him right off the bat before giving him an offer, go to test the market, see what you're worth, and come back to us, and then we'll talk.
Yeah, I think that's kind of smart too. And I'm thinking of like numbers and players and what the money was set in terms of players at his position. So I'm thinking like of Tim Hardaway Jr. with the Knicks, who sort of got overpaid by them, 4 years, $72 million. So that's 18 per. That's like Evan Fournier money, who's getting $16-17 million over 4 years. So you're talking like, if the Bulls were to give an initial offer, it would be like somewhere around 4 years, 70 to 75, 80 million. The bad thing about what I was arguing in terms of letting Zach LaVine go out there and set his own market is all it takes is one team. All it takes is one team that's interested to drive up the price, right? And with the Bulls being one of the only teams to spend, and that bias that I was talking about when you're letting him go out and find other teams and see what they value him at, it's kind of like, okay, this team's in a bidding war with us now, and now we pretty much have no choice because we traded Butler and we can't afford to let Zach LaVine walk. So all it takes is one other team, but I think it's kind of...
Well, I was just going to say, Jordan, like, I see what you're saying, and that's a valid point, but I don't see any teams out there taking a risk on driving up the price just to screw over the Bulls and make them match, because they are still themselves taking a risk of the Bulls not matching.
That's true.
And letting him walk. I don't think that's entirely out of the realm of possibility. If what you're saying happens, and some team out there actually gives LaVine some crazy offer sheet on a multi-year deal that's, you know, paying him upwards of $20 million per, even though the Bulls want to keep LaVine around, and yes, he was a big piece of that Butler trade, they might look at that and say, you know what, we're not comfortable giving Zach LaVine that kind of money, and what we would rather have is that cap space to bring in a top-tier big-name free agent in the summer of 2019, when that free agent class is going to be really interesting, and Zach LaVine may turn out to be a borderline all-star someday, but the Bulls could still have this high lottery pick that they got coming in right now, who hopefully has a good rookie season, and a second-year player in Lauri Markkanen, who looks like he's turning into a star in his own right, and have a little bit of interest to bring some free agents in 2019, and they would rather spend that money having an abundance of cap space a year from now, as opposed to offering that kind of money to Zach LaVine, who they're not sure is worth it.
Look, I understand your point about another team not being there to drive up the price and screw over the Bulls. I understand that there, because like we said, there's only like a handful of teams out there that would have the money in order to even have a conversation with Zach LaVine that's respectful. But at the same time, I can't see any situation this summer where the Bulls would let Zach LaVine walk. Could you imagine? You traded Jimmy Butler not even a year ago, and Zach LaVine was the main piece of that trade, and you're going to let him walk for nothing? For nothing? I just can't see the Bulls front office surviving this summer if they turned around and told their fan base, hey, yeah, we went and traded for Zach LaVine, this guy that we waited all year to recover from an ACL injury. He's going to be maybe our number one in a core future. We've got Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn, who look better than we expected at that trade time. But Zach LaVine was ultimately still that number one. Yeah, we're going to let him walk to maybe a contender like the 76ers or maybe the Wolves or maybe the Spurs or somebody like that that has money still to spend, or maybe even go to the Clippers who have money to spend this summer. I just can't see that happening. I can't see the front office being able to face the fan base and tell you that we traded a top 15, top 20 player in this league, and we let one of the pieces of those walk this summer for nothing.
Jordan, let me tell you something right off the bat. The Bulls front office is not concerned about facing the fan base, because any time that the fan base has, over the past 15 years of Paxson running things, had some kind of issue with decisions they've made, guess what? They're still here. They're still employed. They still have the trust of the Reinsdorf family. And whether or not the fans like them and appreciate what they're doing and believe in what they're doing makes zero difference to them. Yeah, ideally, they want to put a winning product on the floor for the fan base, because the fan base, we just learned, again, led the NBA in attendance this season. Despite a 27-55 team, Bulls fans, they might be throwing money at an Indiegogo page for a billboard claiming for the organization to fire their front office. But hey, guess what? People are still going to the United Center. So they're not concerned about the fan base and what they would say, hypothetically, if they made the trade to get LaVine and then let him walk. I would also bring up this hypothetical to you. What do you think a fan base that's still skeptical about this young core would be more upset by? Letting Zach LaVine walk for nothing, as you're saying, or paying Zach LaVine way more money than he's worth? I think you said when this trade went down, people thought LaVine was the highest potential, highest upside, highest ceiling of those three pieces. And yeah, it was only a 24-game sample size, but that narrative is completely in the past now. I think Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn are the guys that the Bulls fans feel best about right now of that trio, and Zach LaVine is still a large unknown. So would the fan base be more upset at the Bulls matching some ludicrous, close to max deal offer for Zach LaVine, or more mad about letting him walk because they didn't want to pay a ridiculous amount of money to keep him in town? Personally, I think fans would be more upset if they overpaid this guy.
I think that the ultimate answer here is we're going to end up somewhere in the middle, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a one of these extremes. But if I had to pick, I mean, can you really afford to take the chance that you let Zach LaVine walk and he is everything that people talked about? Can you really afford to do that as a Bulls fan base, that you traded a top 15 player to let Zach LaVine walk at age 22? Can you really afford that? If he ends up to turn out to be one of the best shooting guards in the NBA, in this Eastern Conference, in the Western Conference, whoever, wherever he ends up going, can you really afford to do that and to try to explain to your fan base, well, you just traded Jimmy Butler, who a lot of people loved in this city, for this guy that you were investing your future in? And that's to say that Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn turn out to be exactly what we're talking about. So I guess it wouldn't hurt that bad, but still, can you, as an organization who said that they were rebuilding and these were the guys that they were going to invest in, can you really afford him to walk away and then turn into an all-star? I don't think so. So really, if the fan bases are concerned about spending the entire money, who cares? Like, the Bulls are in a flexible situation right now where they have a ton of money, and I don't think he's going to get ever even close to that $29, $30, $31 million a year that the max is going to be this year. If he ends up getting slightly overpaid, maybe somewhere around Bradley Beal's money at $24, $25 million, I think you just take your lumps and hope that this guy is going to turn out to be, because what's your other options? Is you hope on the sixth pick that's coming in, and you hope Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn are still going to be those pieces? I mean, I don't know. It's a sticky situation, and I think either of those extremes aren't likely to happen, but I can't afford to see a guy that you traded a top 15 player for walk away to another team and potentially turn into an all-star.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. I totally hear you there. And I'm just saying, and you're right, I think that hypothetical extreme is unlikely to happen, where LaVine goes out and tests the market and winds up getting some huge, close to max contract, multi-year deal from some team. I don't see that happening. I was just saying, in that hypothetical that's unlikely, it's not ridiculous to suggest that the Bulls let him walk in that situation because they don't believe he's worth that kind of money. And, you know, that is why I'm saying the Bulls have the leverage here, because it's very unlikely that some team of the small handful that actually have that kind of cap space this summer, would make LaVine an offer like that, which is why that the Bulls front office has the leverage to say, here's a multi-year deal. We really want to keep you around. We think this is fair. If you don't think this is fair and you think you're worth more, feel free to test the free agent market. And if you do, if you are interested enough in leaving to make that make more money, come back to us with a signed offer sheet and we'll talk about matching it. And that's why, you know, you said I would feel very uncomfortable if it was anywhere significantly beyond 20, 21, maybe 22 million per season. I don't even think he's worth that. But if, I mean, as you said, if that's what it takes for both sides to walk away at least fairly happy, but that's why the Bulls, who have the leverage, have to start with, as I said, not a disrespectfully low ball offer, but something a little less than what they think he's worth.
No, I totally agree. I think coming to the table with money like $16 to $18 million a year over 4 or 5 years, I think that's pretty fair to start at an offer. And like you
exactly.
said, maybe.
And what's the likelihood that LaVine even finds an offer that matches that
that's
on the
true.
Market? I think it's pretty low that anybody else would pay him that.
I think the only other team that I've been kind of thinking about, and this kind of comes up with just whatever happens this offseason with Kawhi Leonard, and there's a report out there that the Clippers were going to thinking about already putting together a package to try and trade for Kawhi Leonard. If that something like that, crazy like that happened where the Clippers would have the money to spend, maybe that's an option where a Clippers team who's trying to go for it, they trade their 2 first-round picks, they invest in Kawhi Leonard, and they invest in a guy like Zach LaVine. That would be the only scenario where I could see like somebody driving up the price for him. But other than that, you're right. I think it, when all said and done, if you're giving Zach LaVine Victor Oladipo money around $20-21 million a year, I'm walking away from the table not completely happy, but not completely dissatisfied. And I think that's probably how the front office of the Bulls will feel, and maybe how Zach LaVine will feel as well.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely outcome. And you know, now Bulls fans are in this sticky, uncomfortable situation where we just have to wait and see and hope that the Bulls front office recognizes that they have that leverage over LaVine and try to find some kind of common ground, some happy medium that keeps him in town without overpaying.
A couple other quick things, notes from this press conference, Matt, that I wanted to touch on before we get to the NBA playoffs as we wrap up the show. One being the importance of Robin Lopez here. So I think maybe a lot of Bulls fans were surprised at how adamantly John Paxson was about Robin Lopez's place on this team and his role in the future. So if we're talking about Robin Lopez being a part of this team going forward, and I'm talking like 2, 3, 4 years down the line, if that's what John Paxson's talking about, I guess I'm a little bit more surprised than maybe some others are, or maybe everybody is surprised just as much as I am. The other way you could look at this too is, okay, he's only got 1 year left on his deal and they'll probably reevaluate it then. Or if they get an offer that's too good to be true, they're willing to deal him. But I think I was a little more surprised that John Paxson was freely ready to just insert Robin Lopez as part of that core to play together, especially when he was talking about the games that Markkanen, Dunn, and LaVine had played together, and he even threw Robin Lopez's name in there as well. So were you surprised at all by that?
I wasn't surprised to hear Paxson talk so highly about Lopez because we've been hearing it all season long. I mean, we've been hearing it since Lopez came to Chicago in that trade. They value his veteran leadership for the young guys, and they value the fact that on the court, he's as consistent as they come. And before they decided at the All-Star break to give some of his minutes to guys like Felicio and Noah Vonleh to see what they had and try to get some young player development, Lopez was on track to play an 82-game season. He is an Iron Man in the NBA. It's not just that he's well-liked by teammates and people across the league. He does the gritty things. He's a pretty reliable scorer around the rim. He's got a variety of post moves. He might not be a guy who's leading the league in rebounding, but he does a lot of the dirty work by boxing out the most potent offensive rebounding threat of the opponent and allowing the guards and the wings on his team to grab those rebounds so that they can get out quickly in transition, because that's what Fred Hoiberg wants, and Robin Lopez is very good at doing that. That being said, I don't see them keeping Lopez beyond this contract that will expire at the end of the 2018-19 season. I absolutely believe, based on what Paxton said on last Thursday, that they plan on keeping him in Chicago through this offseason, into training camp, and to start next season. And I would anticipate that Robin Lopez is the starter for this Bulls team when they tip off their first game in October or whenever it is. Even if they draft a big with their first pick, if it's Wendell Carter or Bamba or Bagley or whomever, even if they take a big with that pick, it's going to be Rolo starting at center game one next season. You can count on that. But that doesn't mean that they won't listen to offers for Robin Lopez coming up to the deadline next season. If there's a playoff-bound team out there that could use his services, the Bulls will absolutely listen. And even if he stays beyond the deadline next season, I don't see them giving him another contract.
Yeah, you lead me into another question, too, here, just because you brought up the possibility of him being traded maybe at the deadline, but also securing a starting role next season and being a part of what they're trying to build in their development going into next season. I think it brings into another question that Paxton was brought up about the two picks that they had coming up this summer. Obviously, the Bulls, too, to note, if you didn't see this on Friday, the Bulls won the tiebreaker against the Kings. So the Bulls get the sixth slot. If everything goes accordingly, the Bulls will have the sixth pick in the NBA playoffs. If everything goes as planned and nothing weird happens in the NBA lottery on May 15th, the Bulls will be picking six, and I think it's obviously a no-brainer. We all knew that the Bulls, one of the main keys that this Bulls team needs is wing players. Any concern that Michael Porter Jr. is left on the board at number six, and the Bulls turn around and instead take Mikal Bridges and maybe reach a little bit on him and decide to pass on Michael Porter Jr., or do you think if he's there at number six, the Bulls are taking him?
I think if Porter Jr. is there at six and the Bulls are picking at six and they pass on him, that's a terrible decision. I think Mikal Bridges can turn into a strong, solid NBA player, a two-way wing player. He's got some upside. He proved himself in the, you know, Nova's dominant run through the tourney. At the same time, he does not have the ceiling that a healthy Michael Porter Jr. has. We're talking about a guy who, before his back injury, was widely believed to be the consensus number one overall pick. And now he's sliding down on people's draft boards because he missed most of the season and only came back to play like one or maybe two games in their conference tourney and then a one-and-done tournament appearance, March Madness appearance. If all of the other teams ahead of the Bulls, assuming they're sixth, are scrambling and fighting over the bigs, and then one of them, you assume, takes Luka Doncic, and Porter is there at six, you gotta take him. You have got to take him. If they have their choice between Mikal Bridges and Michael Porter Jr. at six, and they take Bridges, then you might see me throwing money at the next GoFundMe to make fun of the Bulls front office in public. Then and only then. Then and only then. You heard it. You can quote me on it. If that situation plays out, ooh, boy, that might be the most mad I've ever been at the Bulls front office.
I think the fan base would have enough money to invest in a billboard somewhere more significantly in Chicago, maybe right downtown in the Loop. Like, there would be so much money thrown at that billboard if they didn't take Michael Porter Jr. at number six if he was available. Like, look, I get it. Mikal Bridges is a really nice player. And if it turns out that the Bulls are maybe between a guy like Mohamed Bamba who might slip and Mikal Bridges, now I can see you reaching a little bit more on Mikal Bridges. Obviously, the upside to Mohamed Bamba is there, and the ceiling is really high on him. But the tools that and the raw skills that that player has over a Mikal Bridges who comes from a winning program that the Bulls front office likes, it would just make more sense there. I think if you take Mikal Bridges at number six, you better be willing to, like we said last summer, push all your chips in front of the table and say, this is what we've got because this is our guy. Like, you're adding a really important piece in this draft at number six. And I feel like you can get a guy, a wing player that will play some type of similar game to Mikal Bridges with that Pelicans pick. There's a lot of good diamonds in the rough that you find at the end, back half of the first round of the draft. So I think me and you say it for Bulls fans out there, for the majority, if Michael Porter Jr. is there at number six and they don't take him, there's going to be a lot of very angry Bulls fans, even more angry than they were. I think everybody's calmed down a little bit from the end of the season and the rebuild in year one. I think you're going to ramp that right back up if Michael Porter Jr. is in a Bulls uniform. And let's also talk about, too, like, seems like he already, like, he should just go and tell everybody else, yeah, I don't want to work out for you guys because I really want to be a Bull. He's been commenting on Zach LaVine's posts.
Don't be stupid, Jordan. Don't tell him you buy into that bullshit.
I don't buy into any of it.
It doesn't matter. Isaiah Thomas did everything he could coming into the draft, and I'm talking about the the OG Isaiah Thomas, not the former Celtic, now, I don't know, Laker, wherever he went. I'm talking about Bad Boys Pistons Isaiah Thomas. He told the Pistons front office every possible wrong answer he could conceive of because he didn't want to go to Detroit. He didn't want the Pistons to draft him. And you know what their GM told him? Said, look, kid, you can tell me every wrong answer that you think I don't want to hear. I'm drafting you anyway. It doesn't matter if Michael Porter Jr. wants to play in Chicago. Doesn't matter what he tells other teams, scouts, and front office members if they meet with him at the draft combine. It does not matter. If a team wants him, they're going to take him. So don't be ridiculous.
All right, then. I think we'll save playoff talk for tomorrow's episode. So tomorrow's episode 2, Matt, there's an extension of this that I want to talk to you and get into about is the lack of seeing Gar Foreman and what that might mean for this team and just what it means throughout the season. We haven't seen much of him at all. So I want to kind of retouch on that conversation as well as get into all the playoff action, not only tonight's game, but over the weekend as well. You're listening to Locked On Bulls. That's going to about do it for us here. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Pack, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you'll find us. Make sure you're listening to us on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and then on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time tomorrow morning. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, we want you to interact with us. So send us your questions, your comments, anything that we've talked about on today's show or maybe last week. Send those questions in 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Have a wonderful day, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.